Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer. This is episode number 322. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing these episodes to you for free. Only partner with companies I believe in both the people and the product, and Train Heroic has a fantastic product, but they're even better people. So if you're in the market, reach out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them the next time you see him at a conference or something. This week, I'm joined by a buddy of mine, Jeremy Hefner. He's the strength and conditioning coach. I guess you're the head strength and conditioning coach for Baylor women's basketball. Just a guy that I've known through the years. When we first met, man, neither one of us had gray hair or anything like that. Now we both got it. But man, just a good friend, a good guy, and excited to have you on the show, man.
Coach, thanks for having me. It's an honor. It is an honor.
Jerry, you've had a handful of roles. I mean, you've been Texas, I think Georgia, at high school at one point, right? Just recently, not too long ago, actually. You were at Baylor, then with the high school, then back to Baylor.
Yeah.
Which one of those stops along the way really developed you into the coach that you are today?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. But, I mean, obviously they all played a role, right. The athletes and the coaches. But my last stint at Baylor – I was here for 7 years under Coach Mulkey, and you know, she's a Hall of Fame coach, and all I can say is that I've learned so much from her. I was gone for 2 years, and so all this information I accumulated over 7 years, it actualized in my own practice with 900 high school athletes. You know, I'm dealing with more athletes than I'd ever dealt with at once. They're coming rapid fire 2 to 3 times a week, 900 athletes. And so you get an opportunity to take everything that you've learned, kind of synthesize it and put it into practice. And so I would say it actualized in the 2 years I was in high school, but I was accumulating all this information for 7 years. And so I would say my last stint at Baylor prior to this one was where I became the coach that I am.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction. I think a lot of coaches forget that, right? Is you're taking from every stop along the way. But there is a sweet spot when you start to kind of put it all together, you know. And I think that's kind of like, you know, I just earlier today I was at jiu-jitsu, you know, and I've been doing some form of martial arts my whole life, but jiu-jitsu is relatively new. But kind of going to that, you know, through that white belt stage into that blue belt stage, and it's like it's a click of all of a sudden you've got it, right? Yeah. And I think I'm glad you said that, because it's something that I think gets missed in that question. You don't win a couple national championships, you don't have the career that you've had without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest that you made and how you learned from it?
The biggest one I think we've all made, I thought too highly of myself and my profession and didn't realize, you know, there's value in it, certainly, and we do play an important role, but at certain times of the year, it's much less than it should be. In certain times of the, you know, it's more than it should be. But, you know, that was really when I got to basketball, that's really when I understood. I had them all off season. I was blowing and going. And then we get into end season, and it's like my voice is not completely diminished, but it's hard to hear, you know. And there was just – I just put too much emphasis on what we were doing and didn't realize where it fit into the – entire piece, you know. And I think, again, it happened at Baylor. I started to realize I got to be with the staff in every staff meeting. I was at every practice. I was at every training session. I knew everything. I had all of the information now, and so I was able to put myself in the place that I needed to be when I needed to be there, as opposed to thinking that it was all about what I was doing all the time, because anybody who's had success knows that it's not.
Yeah, it takes you back to when I was at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Very first, you know, one of my first jobs, and we're going through, you know, staff training, and Mark Asanovich has us draw a circle on the grease board. I think it was a chalkboard that shows our age, right? I think it was a chalkboard. And He's like, all right, now take, you know, section that pie off into, you know, how much of importance you think strength and conditioning is and sleep and, you know, all these, you know, cover all these different elements, right, that go into performance. You know, we had to rattle all those off, and then it's like, okay, put a percentage of that in a pie chart. And, you know, and everybody's making their pie charts different, kind of different, you know, sections, but everybody's got strength and conditioning as this big section, you know, yeah, because we're all strength and conditioning coaches. And then he gets up and he draws his circle, and it's like this little sliver of the pie, and it's everything, coaching, strength and conditioning, sleep, all these things. And then the rest of it's the athlete, right? And the point of it was to keep the athlete number one, not yourself, not, you know, a great athlete can overcome bad coaching. A great athlete can overcome sleep and diet and bad training and all those things. And so we have to always keep that front. That's something that came to mind. It's a good memory. You know, one of the things I talk about, and this is actually Mark Asanovich that did this, was when, in my interview, he asked us to define strength. And that was something that was really hard for me at the time. I'm pretty sure I gave him the power definition, you know, but, you know, here's the most fundamental thing of strength and conditioning and not being able to define it, what that core premise is, was something that woke me up to this whole process. I know you've talked about this before as well. What, when you're talking about defining strength, what do you mean?
Well, Coach, I mean, it's one of my favorite things to talk about. And I mean, I don't have an answer because it's constantly evolving. I'm constantly learning. But if we're talking in the weight room, I mean, we're talking about training joints in a coordinated manner through a full range of motion. That's what strength is to me. And that's what I look for. But I, you know, obviously it's three-dimensional, it's multidimensional, not three-dimensional, you know, so strength means a lot of things. And so for me, I keep coming back to this, can I do the right thing at the right time in the right situation, regardless of the circumstance? And so for me, that's what strength is. Are we doing the right things at the right time, regardless of our circumstance? Am I able to train even though I'm tired? Can I still do what is asked of me? I had a bad day. Can I show up and give my best effort at practice? And so for me, that's what strength is.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there's the mathematical equation of strength, right? And there, or the definition of strength. And there's, you know, what people will, you know, inner strength and mental strength and those types of things. And I think when we're talking with athletes, I mean, it doesn't take you very long when you're in the strength and conditioning field to know that, you know, there's going to be an example of somebody that's not very strong that's great at the sport, or somebody that's, you know, complete opposite of that, or somebody that just has this resiliency that is just incredible. And so, you know, I made a post yesterday or the other day about my daughter doing a deadlift, and it was awful technique. You know, it was awful technique, but she had missed twice, you know, and she just wouldn't let it go. And, but then she jumped in and she ripped it on her third one, and she just overcame that. And so, like, that to me was an example of strength, right? It was
absolutely,
you know, overcoming something that they, you know, that the lesson sometimes is exactly that. You just got to overcome it any way you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I read, I'm trying to find this quote that I was, we're going through the book Team of Teams. I don't know if you, have you ever gone through that?
I haven't, no.
But there's a quote, and here I found it. It's from Peter Drucker, and it says, efficiency is doing things right. Effectiveness is doing the right thing.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that quote before, yeah.
To me, that kind of makes sense for what you're saying. It's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, efficient, but is it effective? You know,
well, you know, Coach, when I first got to Baylor, I presented in my presentation, this was probably 2010, 2011, it was called Redefining Strength. And so we come up, and I did, I was a GA at Texas, I was under Coach Madden, you know, so, I mean, I came up on the football side, but I moved over to the Olympic side. And so everybody always defines strength as the big three. And I just knew that the road I was going down, that wasn't the right answer for me, you know, because like you said, I've got athletes in here who may not be able to bench press 50 kilos, you know what I mean? But they're the best player in the country.
Right.
So you're telling me they're not strong, you know, and it goes back to that, what the definition of fitness is, your ability to do a task, right? And so, you know, that's why I keep searching for this definition of strength, and I think I've found it, but we just, you know, it's not what we all think it is. It's not how much is your back squat? How much is your bench press? And I think if we stick to that definition, we're going to fail our athletes more often than not.
Absolutely. I think that's, I mean, I'm with you. I've been, you know, one of the questions that I've been trying to answer pretty much my whole career is, how do you evaluate a strength coach? You know, and yeah. the obvious answer is if they're strong or not, right? But that's not really, I mean, it's very little almost of what we do on a daily basis, you know? Part of that, you know, obviously working, especially with female sports, you've got, you know, some of the best athletes in the world coming in, but not, you know, but you got various levels of training, I would imagine. You know, you got somebody that's been in the weight room probably since they can freaking hold a basketball, and then you got somebody that's never even walked into a weight room before. You know, it's just naturally gifted. When you're talking about like regression and figuring out how to get everybody on the same page and, you know, and get to kind of a common base, how do you go about, you know, regressing and progressing things in your program?
Well, my biggest thing is I always want to find a way for my athletes to find success in the weight room, because I need them to love it. I know that most of them don't love it when they come in. So basically, when you come in as a freshman, I'm going to assign you a training age of 1-0 or -1. All right. So -1, you're either coming off of an injury, or unfortunately you've had a really bad strength coach. All right. 0 is where most of them are. And then we get a few of those gems that just come from great programs, and you're just blown away with everything that they can do, you know. But what we do in the early off season, our first 2 weeks of the off season, is GPP. All right. So we're going to start with our most basic regression of every exercise. And we will spend about 2 weeks there as a team. We work on tempo. We do a lot of in range of motion pauses. And we do a lot of stuff on command. I don't do it on command. They do it on their own command. I'll have someone command each group. And so we do a lot of that. And what that does is, one, it teaches us how to do it right. And I have found that if we learn how to do it right on the front end, our technique usually holds up as we progress ourselves, you know. Rather than using load or volume, we use exercises as a progression. And so we all start from scratch every year, every off season. We're all starting with a goblet squat. We're all starting with a push-up tension plank. And what we're looking at is, fatigue over 3 years, it's giving them some time to allow their bodies to recondition themselves and recover. All right. You know, and at the same time, the freshmen are learning the techniques. So we're all going to progress together those first 2 weeks. Where we branch out from there is totally dependent on training history and their current abilities. And so you may have a senior that goes straight into a back squat after our GPP phase, and you may have a freshman that sticks with goblet squat pauses for a little bit longer. It really just depends on how they develop. And it goes, the saying that I've become accustomed to is, I took from Coach Sko, is unified, not uniform. We're all going to train squat pattern. But you may see 7 different squat patterns in the off season if you come into my weight room on the same day.
Agreed. You know, managing stress as a strength and conditioning coach, I mean, again, we've been in it for a while now, you know, and stress is stress no matter how you dice it up. Stress is stress for our athletes no matter how you dice it up. What have been some methods that you've found to manage your own personal stress, you know, but also what are some tactics that you've used with your athletes to help them manage theirs?
That's a good one. So for my own personal stress, one of the big things I do is I'm going to get my 7.5 hours of sleep every night. I went through a phase of about a year where I didn't get to when my daughter was, you know, wasn't quite a year old. But outside of that, I prioritize sleep, sometimes maybe to my detriment, but I just know I want to be my best when I get to work every day. It's a big deal for me. So, I mean, I'm not afraid to go to bed at 8:30 at night, if that's what it takes, you know, as long as my daughter's asleep. My wife and I, we cook a lot. I actually have celiac disease. So it's what people would call a gluten allergy, but, we can't eat out a lot. And so our diet, I'm not going to say we don't have the cleanest diet in the world, but we cook every meal that we eat. And so I think that helps me a lot. From a student athlete standpoint, I'm real big on reading the room and reading myself. So for instance, in season, we get back from a road trip. I get up the next morning, I get ready to train, and I feel like crap, right? Well, I didn't play a lick of ball. I didn't get fouled. I didn't get slammed on the floor. I didn't get cussed at by coach. Well, I may have got cussed at by coach. But, But I just know if I'm feeling that way, the way that they feel has to be a tenfold. So I read the room and I read myself as well. If I'm agitated and aggravated and I know that everything in my home life is good, then it's probably something with the team. And so I really pay attention to my internal cues on how I react to the team. But as far as the athletes go, I will cut a lift short. And that's a big thing. Coaches are never going to go easy when it's time to grind. And so I'm real big on giving up my time because I think it's valuable. I may still bring them in the weight room, but we may do a recovery day. And that's something I learned from my coworker, Charlie Melton. I mean, he's one of the best at that. I mean, that guy is, he's taught me a lot in the game. I will find a way to improve their readiness state. And it generally will not come from the weight room. It could be that we have an impromptu meal after practice and I get them some good home cooking, you know, and it's my nutritionist may not support it, but emotionally that's what we need. And that's where we're at. So, and luckily at where I'm at, I have the freedom to do things like that. I can shoot from the hip sometimes, and I have the support to do so.
Yeah. I think it's so important. I think so many times kind of like we were saying earlier where you're so dialed into kind of the set rep scheme or, you know, how the importance of strength and conditioning is. And when you do have a framework of understanding that it's not the most important thing, it's an important piece of the puzzle, but it's not the most important piece of the puzzle. Then making those kinds of decisions doesn't make it, you know, it isn't that big of a deal. I know, powerlifting coaches, you know, that are strength coaches that have maybe a powerlifting background, that if you came downstairs and said, you can't do deadlift anymore, you would see the freaking smoke coming out of their ears, you know. Or a weightlifter, you can't be doing a snatch or whatever. There's always a way to train around things. There's always a way to introduce some new things, and anything in moderation isn't bad, right? I mean, them having a pizza isn't the worst thing in the world. Absolutely. Not to eat pizza every single day, then that becomes a problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my core principles is consistency breeds intensity. And so what I mean by that is we're going to train, and we're going to train consistently. And what I've found out, especially with female athletes, you train consistently. Well, one day they're just going to come in and they're going to want to go get it. I mean, they just are. They just feel good and they want to go. And I'm not going to hold them back. But at the same time, it gives you the freedom to – we've trained consistently. We haven't missed a lift, you know, all off season. So now I know going into the season, when there's a day that it's not a good day to train, that we've really worked hard on the court, coaches kind of got into us, we need some time to allow things to kind of marinate inside of us, but we're going to take the day off. We're going to come in. We may hit a foam roll. We may not do anything. I owe them an ice cream trip from the summer from a competition we have. I'm holding that for a day where I may cancel a lift and we may go get ice cream. I know that that's not in the textbooks and that's not what you want to hear, but that's the reality of it. When you get to be with the team every day and you get to ride the emotional wave and the emotional roller coaster, and you get to talk to coach every morning and you get to see both sides and you're kind of the middle man, it allows you to make some really educated decisions.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree 100%. You mentioned, you know, working with a female sport, you know, and obviously, I mean, you're former military, you worked on the football side for a while. You know, and all of a sudden now you're with a female sport, an elite female sport, but a female sport. And talk a little bit about that transition, you know, of how you had to did you have to change mentally? Did you have to approach it in a different way? Or do you just treat them like, hey, these are athletes and let's roll their sleeves up and go?
I very much treat them like athletes. I think that they've proven that that's what they are. So I very much treat them like that. I won't say that I made the transition when I initially came to female athletics. I have a daughter who turned 4 yesterday. I will say that I made a big transition in that first 6 months of being a father. Now knowing that my words were coming, that they weren't just speaking to an athlete. I guess it's not so much about male, female. It's about they're a daughter, they're a sister, they're a friend. And really making them more of a human being. And less of an athlete or a commodity. That was a big change in my career and the way that I communicated with my athletes. As far as training, no. I mean, we go get it. We do what we need to do, and we train just like an athlete would train. There's definitely not there's no room for it. They want you to push them. You know, one of Coach Mulkey's favorite quotes is, your chief want in life is for someone to push you to be the best you can be. And I love that quote, and it's true. That's, I mean, you show these girls that you'll give them everything that you have, and they will give you everything that they have, and that's the bottom line. And so no difference in my approach other than me growing as a person. My verbiage, the way that I talk, that stuff kind of changed probably about 6 or 7 years ago. You know, as I started to become a parent, and I just started to see that perspective that I hadn't been looking at it from.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I think when you do become a parent, it changes a lot of things, not just how you view your athletes, but it changes a lot. I think combining that with having a daughter, you know, and you know, it's like if somebody came in and said my daughter couldn't do anything, I'd go punch them in their face. Oh. You know, 100%, you know. 100%. I think what advice would you have for maybe that male coach that's maybe a little rough around the edges that's at a high school somewhere? How do they go about getting those young female athletes to get to want and to be in the weight room?
Man, it's something we just talked about. Well, there's a couple things, but regress for success. You know, if she can't bench the barbell and she can't do a push-up and you're just going to berate her, I mean, that's not going to achieve anything. Find a way to make her – find a way to show her that she just got stronger. And it may just be teaching technique. It may be staying tight through a lift. You know, whatever it is, find a way so that she can achieve success and watch what happens. All right? Just if she's good at squatting, build up her squat – and find a way to train what she's not good at. But let's go ahead and hang her hat on the squat or whatever it is that she's good at. If she's the best conditioned athlete, remind her of that every time that she fails in the weight room. But regress for success. Find a way for her to be successful. And once you show her what success feels like in the weight room, I mean, you've just opened the floodgates. Other thing is that we also talked about is keep the goal the goal. I mean, this is a Dan John thing, but like the goal is not to bench press 100 pounds. The goal is to win a national championship or a state championship or your district or your conference. So keep the goal and manipulate variables as needed to accomplish that goal. I mean, that's what we're here to do. And I wish someone would have told me that when I was younger, because I did think it was to bench as much as we could or squat as much as we could or clean as much as we could.
Great. Well, Ben, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh man, I know I should already know the answer to this. You know, if what you've done yesterday looks big to you, you haven't done anything today.
That's awesome. That's great. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
Headspace is something that that I've really enjoyed. I've really got into some breath work with original strength that we use with the athletes. And then in my own practice, getting into meditation, and I'm not going to sit still for 30 minutes. It's not in my nature, but that's what I love about Headspace app. They kind of meet you where you're at. So they got 3 minute drills. They got 1 minute drills. 10 minutes is kind of my go-to right now. But when I started, it was 3 minutes. So it's something that I've really enjoyed and I've shared. I don't share it with a lot of my athletes because I don't think they're ready for it, but the ones that are, I share with them.
Yeah. I think, I talk about this quite a bit. Even on the show where I talk about mindfulness, and like the worst thing you can do for me is put me alone with my thoughts in a quiet space. Like that's terrible.
Absolutely.
But what I do is when I go mountain biking, like I'm present, right? I can't think about anything else and I have to be, you know, in the present moment. And it's when I clear my head, you know? And so I think you got to find something like that, that allows you to be present, feeling nature, you know, being surrounded by nature, and just giving your brain a second to breathe, you know. Yeah,
absolutely. Just push pause. I think the key component you said is the nature thing, the outdoor thing. I mean, that's, I don't know, and maybe it's not for everybody, but I know for me, when I'm outside, it's a game changer for me. I can stay outside for hours at a time and do nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm moving, but I'm not necessarily accomplishing anything. But yeah, nature is a big one for me.
You mentioned Original Strength as a good website, and Tim Anderson has been on the show as well. And your book recommendation was The Quick and the Dead by Pavel, right?
Yeah, it's his new book. It's out, man. Have you had a chance to look at it?
I haven't. I'm going to pick it up.
It's going to rub some people the wrong way, as Pavel can, but he uses science to do so. Sure. Man, it, it really just talks about, it's the same thing over and over. It's like the onion just keeps unrolling, but keep the goal to go. If you're training power, don't be fatigued. All right. If you're training strength, don't be fatigued. So, I mean, he's got some protocols in there that only take 10 to 20 minutes, but you're only doing 100 swings in those 10 to 20 minutes. People are going to be like, well, that's, I mean, you know, if you're not doing 100 swings in less than 5 minutes, you're not doing, and that's not the case. You're using the swing in the wrong way, in his opinion, I think, but also in mine. And so that's something, yeah, my big basketball philosophy is we train the ATP PC system by moving efficiently and getting really strong through end ranges of motion. All right. And then on the other end, we train the aerobic system by allowing for proper recovery. We use tempo work, movement circuits, all low impact stuff. But we rarely ever go glycolytic. And the reason that we do that is because basketball just chews us up. Basketball takes us glycolytic. If we can move well and be strong doing that, and then we can recover quickly, we can play basketball. And so I have a coach that has a high intensity program. So we're going to go glycolytic all year long. And so I don't do that in my training. And I think this is pretty much an anti-glycolytic system is what he's trying to teach you. All right. And so it's just, I've read it once. I'm on my second time through and I still don't quite understand it. But I know there's so much value in it. It's just, and he simplifies everything. I mean, he's the one who started this whole reverse engineering process, you know, like he was the one, first one I ever heard say that. So I'm a big fan, but originalstrength.net is the website for Original Strength and Tim. And people just don't believe it. I mean, if you can dedicate 3 to 5 minutes every day of the week, you're going to see significant changes. And I can't say it enough. My athletes, eyes rolling and all, they do it every time they see me. We may do it for warm up, we may do it for recovery, but they're going to get it in.
Yeah, I guess. I just have Tim's latest book on my bookshelf as well. I agree with you. It makes so much. Again, it's also one of those things like it's too simple to make. That, you know, it's too simple. This is how you learned how to do all these movements,
yeah,
you know, from birth. Yeah. And we just completely forget about them, you know, and you know, I agree. Well, man, like I said at the beginning, you're a guy that throughout your entire career have done it. You know, you've been you. You've obviously researched and made sure that you learned from a variety of people and built up your toolbox throughout, and you've done it with grace, and you've done it at a high level everywhere you've ever been, man. So I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate what you do for the profession, and thanks so much, man.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate you having me. It's an honor. I feel like I'm big time officially now.
You've always been big time, Fred. You got that big old freaking ring on your finger. I don't got one of those.
Yeah, well, I'd hope to get another one, I'll be honest with you.
No doubt.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.